Continental Podcast, episode 83.
Greetings and welcome to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. I'm your host, Don Cardenas, and I hope you've been having a fantastic week. So, I'm going to keep things fairly brief because it is currently melting outside, and I have to record this after turning off my air conditioner. So, before I turn into just a pool of sopping sweat, I'm going to try to get some recommendations out to y'all, and yeah, let's get going. I do have a little bit of house cleaning business to discuss, and that is over on the Comics Coffee Metal Patreon. That is patreon.com/comicscoffeemetal. I'm going to be starting a new series where I'm going to look over my first graphic novel, Pax of the Low Country, and I'm going to be kind of dissecting it. You know, not only just the artwork, but decisions I made, how I was drawing things, what I could have done better, what I'm still doing the same way, what I've abandoned, what I should go back to, and just all the trials and tribulations of just making a comic and in the end making this entire book. It's going to be a multi-part series, but first and foremost, I'm going to be offering the book for a free download. So keep your eyes peeled for that, either on my Twitter or join the Comics Coffee Metal Patreon, and you'll have an access to download the book and then kind of come along with me after I start posting those videos next week, and we can kind of go on this journey of what it takes to make the comic, make comics, and, you know, hopefully you can let me know what your journeys were like and things you've come across, and, you know, you can have a nice, great conversation about all that. So that's all I got for house cleaning business, so let's get to these recommendations.
Hey there, I'm Liana Kangas, and I'm actually the co-host of Comics Inebriated, a podcast about current and past events for history and weird facts about comics, pop culture. And all the while, we actually sit down with our fun special guests and have a quick drink. And one of those guests is actually Don of this very podcast. So come over, come hang out, come listen to it, and enjoy your time for the rest of this podcast.
Okay, so for my music recommendation this week, I want everybody to go check out the new album from the band Sasquatch and the album Fever Fantasy. Now, Sasquatch was a band that's been around for about 2 decades now, and besides, you know, somehow managing to capture one of the greatest names ever, I've been not familiar with them. They released this album, like, oh, it's awesome cover art. The name Sasquatch rung a bell. I'm like, let me check this out. And ooh boy, was I pleasantly surprised. This is some big, thick, rockin', fuzzy, just ass-kicking, doomy metal stuff. Not so much doom in the sense of this foreboding, like, vibes or anything like that, but just the live, raw feel of the drums and just the fuzz on the guitars and the bass. It's such a great sound. And coupled back with the singer's very Chris Cornell-esque vocal range and style. And yeah, it kind of feels like mid-90s Soundgarden by way of the Sword with some extra fuzz. And if that doesn't capture your interest, then move on. This is some really, really awesome stuff. There's like so many tracks on here that just kick all kinds of ass. You know, I love good, big, thick heavy metal and just stuff that just pummels you and pummels you and pummels you. And there's a time and place for that. But there's also times where I kind of want to be, you know, rocked, for lack of a better term. Actually, there is no better term. It's rocking, but it's still metal. It's still got those tinges, those vibes, those excess, you know, bits of just aggression and noise and just feeling that makes metal metal. So, yeah, this is definitely something that's just, it's great for like, as we've been experiencing in my area, very hot days where just things just kind of suck. But you turn this on, you blast it up, you go for a car car ride. You roll down the windows a bit and you're still sweating your ass off, but you know, it just feels right. it feels just and understandable. So there's a ton of great tracks on here. My favorite is by far is the second track. So we're going to take a listen to that. So yeah, go check out Sasquatch Fever Fantasy. This is the track Lilac. My comic book recommendation this week is very much tied to my guest. If you are a fan of metal, if you're a fan of comics, I highly, highly recommend you go to Kickstarter.com, type in Maurice in the Metal, and go and back the ever-loving shit out of this book. I backed the first two issues when they were being kickstarted just over a year and a half ago, I believe. And yeah, it's just... It's an amazing book. It's such a love letter to mid-80s metal, and it's such a great premise of a heavy metal drummer who gains super strength when he listens to metal from his Walkman that's been, I guess, possessed by the spirit of a Black Sabbath roadie. It's an amazing premise. I am totally jealous. I did not think of it myself. And the first two issues were beautifully drawn by the late, great Jesse Hamm. And the third issue is drawn by Nicola Izzo, who takes what Jesse did and keeps that style kind of going with it. We talk about this a lot with my guest, Aaron Samet, the writer of the book, in the interview coming up. And yeah, it's just an amazing book. It's got such heart to it. It's got such great humor and fun and... just such a great vibe to the book. It's really, really entertaining. And as we get into the interview, there's a lot more to come. And yeah, I want to see more of this book. I want to see issues 3, 4, 5, beyond however long it's going to go. And it's a really, really, really great book. And I highly recommend you go check it out. It is available right now on Kickstarter. Like I said, for the next few days, it technically ends on June 22nd at 6:30 p.m. Central something time. Just if it's before June 22nd and you're listening to this, go back it. Link in the show notes. Awesome, awesome book. It's a type of metal and comic book that I wish I had thought of and made, but since I didn't, I am more than happy to read the amazing work from the people behind it. So definitely go check this out, and stay tuned for my interview with the writer, Aaron Samet. We have a fantastic chat about the book, the process of it, and he's just a great dude who I can't wait to get back on the show when we talk about issue 4. So let's get to it.
Oh, hello, fellow humans. You caught me in the middle of drinking coffee while reading comics and listening to metal. Do you ever get curious about how your favorite creators get their inspiration? Have you ever wondered what led them down this path? Well, join me, noted comic book heartthrob Grant Stoy, as I do deep dive interviews with some of the best comic book folks around on Into the Comics Cave. Each week we examine a creator's history and find out stuff like where they grew up or whether or not birds with lips are sexy. You can find us on Apple, Stitchers, most anywhere you stream your podcast. Now back to my favorite hugger in the world, Don Cardenas.
And it is now time for my guest. As any more than one time listener will know, I am an incredible mark for mixing metal and comics and music and comics. And I was incredibly pleased when one of my longest internet friends announced his new project that he was working on, Maurice and the Metal. And I backed the first two issues, and it was amazing stuff. And unfortunately, my friend Jesse Hamm passed away. And as tragic as that was, I'm sure, knowing Jesse, he would never want comics not to happen. his deep love of the medium is well documented, and I'm incredibly pleased to speak to the writer of Maurice and the Metal, because not only was I a huge fan of Jesse's art in the first two issues, I was really in love with the story, and I'm so glad that it's continuing on. And before we get into the trials and tribulations of just making comics in general and mixing metal, where all this came from, Aaron Samet, Comics Coffee Metal, what are you digging right now?
Hi, Don. Thanks for having me on the show. At the moment, it has to be metal. Metal influences my love of coffee. Metal influences my love of comics.
Well, we could talk about all of it.
Yeah.
Well, let's start with metal then. What metal's driving you right now?
For me, metal, like, there's a heyday with mo things. Everything pop culture has like peaks and troughs. And I kind of just zoned out during the mid to the late 90s because nu metal was just kind of getting too popular and it was too safe and, it was just didn't sound great. But when I came back to metal as like a 28-year-old, I fell in love with bands like Mastodon and just like this new take on it. So there's been a couple of bands pop up and... like three songs that I just can't get off my rotation right now is Mastodon's Crystal Skull, which is a bit old now, but the band Deaf Heaven, they got this song called Brought to the Water, and it's always on rotation in my house. And Demolisher by the band Slaughter to Prevail. If anybody listening to this wants to hear something crazy, Slaughter to Prevail's Demolisher is that song. And the reason I chose metal is because, well, my comic is about metal, but I don't know, it centers me. I'm not considered an aggressive person, but I just listen to aggressive music and it just makes sense.
I'm with you 100%.
Yeah. I mean, my background comes from publishing, so magazines, and I used to work for a music magazine. And my job was to design the magazine, but also to go out and shoot bands and festivals. And I just had the best experience at metal festivals. Like, even though I had a camera and I was there to do a job, I was still part of the community. And, that metal runs deep with people. I love other genres of music, don't get me wrong, but you just got the special black heart, for metal. Absolutely. And metal influences the comic. It's part of the story. It's deeply ingrained in the story. And it's influenced the story, too. So... it's just never that far away from me, really.
Awesome. What was your gateway band into metal?
Is this a question like that you ask most metalheads?
No. I tried. Well, in the earlier days of the show, I would kind of posit the theory that most people who got into metal got in through one of the big four: Metallica, Megadeth, Anthrax, Slayer.
Yeah,
As my guests have become steadily younger,
right, that's changing.
Than I, that is definitely not the case. Yeah. So, but I when I speak to someone like you who has that deep love of metal and has been just so encased with it, that's just kind of you just kind of think, well, what was your in? Because we all have something different, I think.
Yeah,
at least absolutely. a different way.
I asked that question back because I love that question. And I think any metalhead, they know that day. I could probably pin it down to the year. It was 1989. I was visiting my cousins who lived in a different city and we were visiting. And Faith No More's Epic came on. And they had long hair. They were wearing grunge gear, and I came from a rural town, so I had no idea what I was looking at. And when that song came on and they started headbanging, I was looking at it going like, this is just a crazy world. And I didn't know whether or not I was doing the right thing by kind of getting into it. I was scared by it because it was so heavy and aggressive, and it was new to what I, you know, I wasn't comfortable with it. But I just couldn't look away. That the answer to that question is Faith No More's Epic. Technically, probably not a metal song to most people, but
it's metal.
Yeah,
it's cool. Metal. Cool. There's not a metalhead alive that would say that's not a killer song.
Yeah, like, that's
And that is so not the answer though I would have expected, just because it is, even to this day, it's still such a unique sound.
Oh, absolutely.
Like I was just listening back to some Faith No More recently. Mm-hmm. And yeah, just the vocals and the bass, and it's just, and then there's, it comes in with the crushing riff.
Yeah.
And it's just like, yeah, it's just, it still sounds new and kind of fresh like today. And that's just kind of crazy. So no, I totally appreciate and respect that answer.
Oh, cool.
To answer it back.
Yeah.
I'll have to say, it was the video for Metallica's The Memory Remains.
Oh, wow.
That's
what
got me.
Yeah.
Because I'd been aware of metal, you know, up until that point. I think I even made fun of, like, some Metallica stuff, whatever. But I was just, you know, I don't know when that video came out. I was probably, a freshman in high school or something like that. And just, you know, the main riff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, huh. I like this.
Yeah.
And then the video is kind of interesting with the rotating room and the things like that. And I'm like, huh. And then at the end of the song, I was just like, oh shit, I like this. So then, and I just kind of went from there. Cause I'm one of the people who got into Metallica in the load reload era, but then I went back and then I'm like, oh, this shit's killer too. Like this is, so I like all of it.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't have the culture shock of, you know, just this Black Album load, you know. I already started at the, I guess the controversial point. Well, I guess if someone got into Metallica at Saint Anger and went back, that's probably a more controversial point. But
yeah, no, this seemed like a totally different band.
Yeah. And I think that's what I kind of loved about it, is because they seemed, even with the thrash albums, they seemed different. Like it's different. You know, Kill 'Em All is way different than Ride, which is different than Master, which is different than Justice. So,
yeah
definitely. Yeah. And I think that's probably what my appeal to was too.
Yeah,
to it all.
So,
and
because it all sounded so different.
Yeah, because it's just like it was like, oh, here are these guys who do this thing I like, and here they're doing something a little different, but I like this too. So yeah. Metallica definitely became one of those bands for me where it's like, whatever mood I was in. Mm. They had an album that was like, for that.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah, that's great.
And you know, you mentioned earlier that you're not an aggressive guy, but you listen to really aggressive music, and I kind of feel the same way about myself. I'm not an aggressive person at all, and I listen to some of the gnarly shit sometimes.
I've always wanted to get pulled over by listening to metal and just like getting the cops hassling me for it, going, a lot of people just don't understand it. I think it's such a fantastic thing to feel like you're doing something that not anybody else understands, and you can kind of take ownership of it. It's like personal.
Mm-hmm.
But then when somebody puts up these barriers and says, I don't want to be involved with metal because I don't understand it, I think those people are missing out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think, a great thing these days is that metal has, especially with all genres, because everyone has access to everything. So you don't have to feel like you have to be super specific with things. You can just kind of listen to everything. And metal has really, there's been so many offshoots of metal now that I feel like a, you know, kid in a candy store where it's like, oh, I want something kind of a little bit goofy but like kind of like bouncy and fun. You know, there's like a dozen bands for that. I want something like, you know, just, I want the world to burn down right now. Oh, I got plenty of that.
Or there's a lot of that. You got that covered. You know,
exactly. So it's like, I want something a little more gothy and just kind of operatic, you know, there's stuff for that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I love metal so much. You know, I believe it's a medium, not a genre. And it's just something that just is it. I'm not going to say that other genres of music are bad, because I listen to all kinds of stuff, but metal can always make it better.
Metal makes it better. So you said it's a medium, not a genre. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like it where like somebody listens to something that they're clearly inspired by another band, and then when they come to write their own music, it's like, I can tell where their inspiration's coming from, but you've added your own flavor to it. And yeah. Yeah. A lot of other genres seem like, yeah, it's like you're doing what's popular. Whereas I think when metal's underground, it comes back, you know, in those peaks and troughs, like I was saying, it just comes back so much more interesting. Mm-hmm. That feeling that I had when I first listened to Faith No More, and I was scared and intrigued and didn't really know what I was listening to. When I first heard Deaf Heaven, like I hadn't heard that before. So like, yeah, metal's doing that to me even, you know, 30 years after I first heard it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Same here. Like I was very much becoming more of a hard rock kind of person. Mm-hmm. And then I heard Gojira's Magma album.
Right.
And that unlocked something in me where I'm like, holy shit. Like, this is not only the type of metal I would love to play and write, but just what they're doing, it's so simple at times.
Yeah.
But it's also like, it's also like, how would they think of that? Like, just some of these rhythms they have, and of course they have much more technical kind of stuff in their earlier years and all that, but just, you know, I was just kind of shocked that, oh man, after all this time, I can still like have that fire just like rekindled just like that.
Yeah. Like, by it hearing didn't take a band. Much to get back into it.
Yeah. I mean, I never left metal. Like, I was getting more into like, again, like hard rock stuff, or, you know, more like symphonic metal stuff. But even then I was getting kind of tired of it. Because as much as I love symphonic metal and the stuff like Nightwish, a lot of bands became kind of Nightwish light. So it was kind of getting really samey.
Yeah.
And then Gojira comes along, and then I'm like, oh. And then, you know, my ears started to open up a bit more to harsh vocals and screaming and stuff. And now, you know, I can listen to, you know, stuff like Orbit Culture, which is considered like melodic deathcore or whatever. And then I can listen to something that's straight up death metal, like this new band Crypta, and or just recently Decapitated, and then switch gears and go to like, you know, Birthday Massacre, which is like gothy, you know, pseudo metal, you know, kind of stuff, and then switch back to some Metallica or whatever. So,
you
know, I'm scared, I'm all over the place, but it's also because, you know, there's so many places you can go.
Yeah, absolutely. I know. I love that part about metal. As much as I love something, you know, I can critique it. There is, you know, certain bands that I go, well, you know, I do like that stuff. I don't much like this stuff. But at one point, and you might be able to help me answer this question, but if you have an album that's on rotation in your house and you're listening to it, how long until you want to listen to something else? Do you sit like there and listen to the same album for a week? Like, maybe just turn it on, let it go?
Well, due to the nature of the podcast, I try to recommend albums every show.
Mm-hmm.
So I tend to like live with an album for at least a couple days.
Mm-hmm.
I try to give it a passive listen while I'm doing things, and then I try to give it a more focused listen at the very least.
Right.
So I can kind of like really do that.
But
that said, it's pretty easy for me just to switch gears. Like, I can listen to an album and be like, okay, cool. Even if it's one I love or whatever, I can easily go to something else. You know, there hasn't been a lot of like, I got to repeat this album right now.
Yeah. Right.
And that's not a knock on the albums, because I just think right now I'm kind of wired to be like, okay, what's next? And then I have been trying to go back and like revisit some of these albums I've been recommending and stuff like that, because I do recommend them, you know, honestly, you know, it's not, if I don't have a recommendation, I just don't do one.
Yeah, yeah.
But usually I can find something.
Yeah, because I ask because like an album might come out, say like Tool's 10,000 Days. When that first came out, I went, it's okay. And then like almost a decade later and I'm listening to one of the songs and I just realize how layered it was, how impressive the songwriting was. It wasn't Lateralis, I guess. That's what I was, you know, I kind of wanted Lateralis too. But yeah, 10,000 Days just crept up on me, you know, almost 10 years after it came out. And I went, wow, okay, I did not give this album the time of day when it first came out. And like now it's one of those regular rotation ones. You know, I don't know whether or not it happens like you're supposed to go, I'm meant to get into this album right now. No, this one's like a slow burn. I meant to get into it later. But yeah, I just love that part of metal where, like you say, like you've got, there's an album for every mood.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Mm. No, I totally get what you're saying. I can't say I've had that experience recently. Yep. But I can definitely say I've had that.
Yep. One is of it the because been, of the nature of the podcast and you have to,
yeah, I think find, it's just yeah. nature. Cause I'm constantly trying to move and find something new, find something different and stay on top of things. So usually every Friday when, you know, there's new music on Apple, I go and I kind of, for my Patreon, I actually did like a couple videos where I was like going through my process and it is so hectic because basically I'll find an album, click on it, I'll like click through a song and repeat for a few songs in that album and move on. Like just because I'm trying to find something that grabs me, you know, and while it's a very quick process to try to find something to pick on to listen to that day, I'll go back, you know, and make sure if I, you know, did I not give this one a fair shake or whatever, or if it's a band I've heard of but haven't really listened to, or if, you know, even stuff as, you know, as simple as this artwork's really cool.
Yeah.
I don't know why I struggled with that word. That album artwork looks really cool. Let me check this out. And I've found some really great music that way. Like, oh, this is really cool. And
do you ever leave it up to the algorithm on Spotify and iTunes and just let it like the radio?
I don't do a lot of the shuffle thing with that kind of stuff just because I want to. I don't have the time to,
time to waste. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Because a lot of my work and my finding stuff is done early in the morning or late at night. And during the day, it's very hit or miss where I can listen to stuff. Cause I got two little ones and they're not into metal.
Not yet.
So, you know, hopefully when they're a little bit older, they'll get into a bit more, but right now, so yeah, they don't want to listen to daddy music. So I can't really check out too much, around there, but usually if I'm doing the dishes or something and, or if I'm grocery shopping or something and I'm just listening to just like the most fucking brutal things and I'm like picking out bananas. You know,
as you're buying milk, it is funny how like people look at it and go, like, why are you listening to that music now? Like, is there a right time to listen to dance music? You're not dancing; you're just listening to dance. Yeah. Like, there's. I mean, that's the reason why I love my comic book and the era that it's set in is 1985, the Bay Area. So it's like it's the mecca for thrash metal. And how deep the world is, and I've got so much to play with as far as like the parents of that generation of kids, and they have just such a fear of metal. There's so much more fun to be had when there's conflicts within characters. I think people are more accepting of different genres now, but back then they had this thing called the Satanic Panic. So any music that seemed like it was devil related was just looked at like that kid's on the wrong path. And I, you know, having the ability to play with that in a story is just, it's just amazing.
Yeah, that's, I totally appreciated the setting that you had and just you totally capture like the vibe of everything, with this book. And it was a real treat to read the first two issues and I'm glad, I can't wait to read the third and see where the story continues to go.
Yeah. Thanks for the support. And your introduction there about Jesse, you know, he was, is truly, as you introduced him then, you know, he was such a knowledgeable person about comics, and I was very fortunate to find him. And so was Maurice as a character. You know, Jesse was integral. Jesse held my hand through the entire process because I'd never done anything like that in ever, really. So, yeah, no, he's his death was a great loss to the comic industry for sure.
Yeah. I don't want to be a downer about it and
yeah,
and all that, but, it feels right to acknowledge, and acknowledge it, especially since, Jesse was one of the first people I met on the internet.
Really?
And wow. Yeah. When I started doing Twitter, he was just such a wealth of knowledge, and just, the @hamtips Twitter feed that's still up. If you're an artist, aspiring artist or writer, go check that out. It is it's school. It's school presented so well for you. Yeah. When he, was doing this, I was like, oh, awesome. Like, great. I can't wait to get him on the show. Unfortunately, that did not come to pass. Again, like I said, it's a loss to the comics industry. But again, he is one of the people who would be probably the most annoyed if things did not continue, if things did not move on, if comics were not made. And yeah, so,
absolutely,
not keep the mood down low. Mm-hmm. Things are moving on.
Yeah.
The new team looks great. It looks fantastic.
Yeah, no, they've done well. That's Nicola Itzo. So after I finished issue 2 with Jesse, he told me that he wasn't going to be available because he was working on a Dark Horse project.
Oh, okay.
But just to have, because he was going to be there as a consultant and help me find the new illustrator, and I just felt like because he was so integral to the character, I would always have this safety net of like running things past him. Mm-hmm. Because of that wealth of knowledge you speak of, So I'm glad that he taught me so much, and the amount of respect and patience he had for me was just incredible. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, it just continues to speak to his character. We all deeply appreciated what he did, and the fact that, he was so supportive of this book and as you said, was going to remain as a consultant, I think that truly speaks to the quality of what you're doing and how much he believed in the project and all that. So what was with choosing the new team, that's a very difficult thing to choose a team and then have to do it again, and it sounds like that was going to have to happen anyway. How long was the process for finding that? Because I have to imagine finding a new team to pick up with issue 3 is probably almost more difficult than finding the person for issues 1.
Yeah, it took me about 6 months of just getting in contact with people who I thought could follow onto with the style of Jesse. And if you put 100 illustrators side by side, they're all distinctly going to be different. Mm-hmm. So I had to find somebody who wouldn't be so jarring, like when somebody reads issue 1 and then issue 2 and then issue 3 is completely different. That was not going to work. So I had to find the right illustrator who could follow the style, put their own flair on it, and actually be comfortable doing that. Like it's an imitation game where you want to continue the style, but you want to put your own flair on there. And that was a bit of a juggling act. The book at the moment, I think, is 40 pages for issue 3, just for the comic.
Oh, wow.
And the first 10 pages was, like pulling teeth, really, with Nicola, because things were looking too different and we had to work together to kind of meet this in this middle ground. But by the end of the last 10 pages, we were flying, we were getting through it a lot faster. And that was due to, better communication than I had on issue 1 because I didn't know what I was doing there. Mm-hmm. I think Nicola by the end of it was like appreciative of that open communication, that dialogue, the ideas going back and forth. So all up with the 6 months of looking and then the 6 months of production on issue 3, I think we'll be able to cut issue 4 down to like a 3-month production cycle, which is so much better because I feel like the faster we get these books out, you know, it's just better for the reader to keep that flow going. At the moment, you know, it's like a book a year, and that's just not fair on the readers.
Yeah, it's a long spell. I did that with my own independent project. It was roughly around a book a year, and yeah, it feels like you're starting from scratch all over again every time when it comes to promo and stuff like that, and yeah. It feels like whatever momentum you get is just boom, gone. But based on the preview pages, Nicola did an amazing job of maintaining that feel mm-hmm. that Jesse did, but it is a different artist. There are different nuances happening, different stylistic choices that are happening, but it all still feels cohesive. It kind of reminds me of when Ryan Ottley took over from was Corey Walker from Invincible.
Yeah.
Where their styles weren't exactly the same, but they were close.
Yeah.
And then obviously Ryan went in a different direction and all that, and they're both amazing artists. And so yeah, it kind of reminds me of that. It's almost, you know, it's never going to be a seamless transition, but it definitely isn't distracting or jarring or anything like that, which, you know, awesome. Because,
yeah,
you know,
it had the potential to derail the reader.
Yeah.
I think if it was like a trade paperback and you had to read issue 2 to issue 3 straight away, but because they're separate books. Luckily enough, the introduction for issue 3 is a dream sequence, so it does feel different even in the style. So hopefully that does just lead people into this choice, you know, this difference. It was quite an experience to actually have to start from scratch again as finding a new illustrator. And, you know, compared to a lot of illustrators, Jesse's knowledge, you know, puts him, you know, just above a lot of people. Especially that style, like it was the Archie, you know, Silver Age American style comics, which I think, like before I saw Maurice as a character, I didn't know what I was going to get. And then after Jesse showed me that first, you know, drawing of Maurice as a character, I went, okay, I get it now. This is what it's going to be. I'm so fortunate to have met Jesse, so fortunate to have met Nicola, and everything's cooking really well.
Awesome, awesome. You kind of touch on it a little bit in the Kickstarter campaign information, but the impetus for the story, what was the, do you kind of remember distinctly what the seeds were and how that kind of developed, or is it all kind of a blur now?
No, it's clear. And I came up with the idea about 10 years ago and just left it cook for mm-hmm. that long. I was listening to Simon and Garfunkel on my way to work. And I was just flat, you know, I was depressed. And the song I chose was Metallica's Master of Puppets to get me to work. I hopped off the bus, and with every step that I took, you know, I was like pounding the pavement. I just felt stronger and better. And it was like a 5-minute walk to work, and, you know, the song was still blaring. And as I opened the door, I realized, why couldn't a superhero be powered by this? You know, I'm feeling the strength. Why can't a superhero? Sat down at my desk, and I was just making post-it notes like crazy, like getting through them. So the memory is so ingrained in my memory, because although I've lived like a creative life building magazines, and this is the first time I ever felt like I was struck by something, because the ideas just wouldn't stop. So I finished that day with practically what turned out to be the character as they are now. You know, they've got a Walkman possessed by a Black Sabbath roadie. You know, they get this strength from metal, but the other genres take it away from them. So when they hear pop music, you know, they get weak and disorientated. That just came on that first day. You know, I didn't really have to force it. And I hope that the readers, when they do read the comic book, they go, this seems like it flows, like the idea is making sense. You don't have to particularly like metal, but you just have to understand that music has an emotional impact on people. And in my comic book, it's just taken a physical impact on this person. And, you know, somebody has asked me, like, it couldn't be anything else other than metal. And I think that's a really funny premise to have, like, Maurice be a jazz man. And for some reason, what would jazz do to his personality? And I think that's one of the funny things that we'll touch on as the issues progress.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, it's so it's such a, like, I don't want to say simple as it, cause it could sound derogatory, but it's such a, like, an idea of, like, why can't metal make you a superhero? You know, why can't this power that, you know, especially, you know, it's, you know, so many, like, bodybuilder types or, you know, whatever fitness people, you know, whenever you see, like, their playlist, it's all metal half the time. Yeah. And it's like, well, yeah, why can't this be? And the,
yeah, absolutely.
I think the biggest smile that comes to my face when I think about it is just the fact that it's a Black Sabbath roadie who possessed the Walkman. And it, for me, that's just like, that's just perfect.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's, well, absolutely perfect.
Yeah. That was a lot of fun to come up with, because I didn't want to do the duo two characters, because only one person can really be the superhero character. And if you start thinking duos, then you start thinking Bill and Ted's, and didn't want to go down that path. So I did need another character that wasn't going to take the spotlight, but also help progress the story. So the Walkman ends up being a bit of a guide, and the fact that he's a roadie as well makes such perfect sense. Like, and these are things that happened organically.
Have
anybody seen the M&M, the Maurice and the Metal icon? It's two M's with arrows pointing down, and somebody told me that the negative space within the M, the white parts, actually look like the devil horns. And I freak out when I see that happen, because it's just happening. I'm not really in control of it. It's just a strange experience. And if this is a comics and metal and coffee podcast, and if anybody's out there thinking about doing a comic book, just go out there and get it done. Listen to metal, mm-hmm. drink coffee, and make comics. Just go and do it.
That's the dream.
That's the dream. Yeah. Yep. I just want to sit down and drink coffee and make comics.
We've kind of shot past it, but I'd like to bring it back to, let's talk about some coffee. Like, what's your choice for coffee? Are you a big like a French press guy, a drip guy? Do you like a dark roast, a light roast? Let's get nerdy with coffee for a bit.
My drink of choice is just a long black with double shot, and then on certain days it'd be a triple shot of espresso. I'm not sure even how much to say, but just like a drop of hot water in there, and I am gold. It would usually be French press, but because I've got an espresso machine in my house now, I just let that drip go. And you know, I think I got more health conscious in my later years. Like when I turned 38, I went, all right, stop, time to start, you know, not having sugar. And yeah, I haven't gone back to having sugar in my coffee. I think I drink too much of it though. I get to the point where I'm having my afternoon coffee and I just start getting sleepy while I'm drinking it.
Oh,
but yeah, I guess a funny answer to be to that question is I like my coffee like I like my metal. You know, I like a black, some black metal. But yeah, it's just one of those things now where it's as routine as cleaning my teeth, you know, like you have to have a coffee in the morning. Things just don't feel right.
Mm-hmm, for sure. For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah. What about you, Don?
Yeah. I kind of go with everything. I have a drip machine we make a full pot for myself and my wife that we split throughout the day. And sometimes we do another one. But I like to try coffees too, and especially with this podcast, I also like to try different coffees and talk about them on the show. And so from there, you know, I'll do both. I'll make a pot of it, and then I'll also do it a French press style and see how they get there. I take a little bit of creamer and sugar. I'm trying. I keep trying not to, but I keep coming back to it. But when I try a new coffee, I try it black, just because you never know. Is that going to be the one that does it?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah,
is that going to unlock the non-poser in me to just drink the coffee black? But
no, I don't think that's a question of posing or not posing. That's I think people look at people who drink just straight black coffee as they're posing. Like, you can't possibly like that. But I think your taste buds just do adjust to it. It's like when you first try whiskey, it's just too much, and then you know after a year and sticking with it, then yeah, all of a sudden you love whiskey. But a coffee to me, it's a function as well. Like you, I do need that. And the only time I really notice coffee is when it's a bad coffee. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like I could sit there and drink, you know, some really fancy bean that's, you know, made by a local roaster and go, yeah, that's pretty good. But then I could have like the Vittori coffee and go, yeah, that's pretty good too. You can just, I do like the idea of having, what do they call them? The percolator coffee, you know, you put them on the stovetop and it, that, and just, yeah, like you say, like take a coffee bean and try and cook it as many different ways as possible. See what it comes up. Yeah, see how like it's different.
Yeah, there's like the pour over method and the was it Chemex? I don't know if they're the same thing or not. But yeah, it's there's such so many great like rituals you can do with it.
And yeah, absolutely.
I definitely think that I try to avoid getting too ritualistic with it because I know like that's a rabbit hole I can fall down. And yeah. Just next thing I know, I'm spending 20 minutes making my coffee in the morning. I'm like, I don't have time for this.
Yeah. Don, would you consider yourself a bit of a snob?
Oh, no. I mean, no? I know what I don't like. I know what I don't like. Yeah. But
I didn't mean that as like a comment on your personality, but somebody asked me, you're a bit snobby. And I went, hell's yeah, I am. I'm not going to put anything in my mouth that doesn't need to be there. And I'm going to comment such. I'm not going to read a comic that's beneath me. No, I'm a snob. I don't have to listen to music, especially.
I think the, for me to be technically classified as snob, you would have to actively like put it down because it doesn't meet some rigorous demands you have of whatever it is.
Yeah, true.
Like for me, if someone's like, oh, I love drinking the Starbucks coffee, and I'm like, not for me, good for you, I guess. I don't know. I don't really care that much. Yeah. And you know, same with music or whatever. It's like, okay, that's what you like. Yeah. There's so many great things out now that it's I think it's kind of hard to be. You have to like go out of your way to be a snob about things.
Yeah, yeah,
I think.
True. That's a good point. I think
in your sense,
behavior.
In your definition, though, I can definitely, you know, I probably can't be a snob about things.
I like that. A snob is more of a person who's going to try and convince other people that their coffee, comics, or metal is better than anybody else's. I don't do that, but when somebody asks me about my opinion about something and I give them a really in-depth answer, they go, you're a bit snobby about this. And I go, yeah, I kind of am. You kind of need to be. I'm not going to just listen to anything. I'm not going to drink anything. I'm not going to read just anything. I'm going to do things that are personal to me.
Is it snobby or is it just, you know, being knowledgeable? Like,
yeah, exactly. All right.
You asked for my opinion and I gave it to you and now you're going to complain about it. Like,
yeah. Yeah,
like, that's on you, not me.
absolutely. You're showing your insecurities there, not mine.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's hard for anybody who's in comics or a comic book fan to not feel like you're the comic book guy from The Simpsons.
True. Like, it's, you know, well, for me, my wife was not a comic book person or is not a comic book person. But when the MCU movies first started happening and things like that, and it was kind of fun because we would leave the theater and she's like, okay, so was it like that in the books? And then I get to go, well, actually, you know, and I get to do all, that. But in day to day, it's just like, I don't know. I've always kind of not had the energy to be that, to be gatekeepy about things. Yeah, I always thought like, if I love a thing and then someone's like comes later on, like, hey, that thing you love, I just found out about it. I just checked it out. I love it too. My idea isn't like, well, too bad, you know, you're fake. You should have not been there from the start. My response is like, fuck yeah, isn't it great? Like,
yeah. Absolutely.
Welcome aboard.
So, yeah. All right. Well, then I'm happy to say that, Don, you are not a snob and I can feel like I'm not a snob now as well.
Good. unless we're being snobby about our definition of snobs.
I just went outside.
That might be too far down that rabbit hole there.
Yeah, that's pretty meta there.
So you kind of said some things earlier. So was Maurice in the Metal your first comics, like the first comics you've actually made, written and all that?
Yeah, the the first narrative story I've written, the first script, the first comic, the first kind of thing where, you know, I said it was like 10 years ago that I came up with the idea. And I think it was about 6 years ago where I went, that's it, I'm doing it. It was one of those things where it was the first thing I thought about when I woke up. And it was the last thing I thought about when I went to sleep. And after working in publishing for nearly 16 years at the time, or 15 years at the time, I went, no, that's it. I'm sick of making books for other people. I'm doing it. I'm going to commit to it. Instantly, I was like so naive that I was going to get it done. You know, you look at a comic book and they're called the sillies, the cartoons, and you go, wow, this is really in depth. You're kind of writing a screenplay for a film. You're kind of writing a description for an illustrator and hoping that they understand it. You got to think of the characters. You got to think of, like, you can't just have one character and go through a world or an environment where there's nothing else going on. There's story arcs that interlock, and there's conflict, and there's character, and there has to be humor, and there has to be heart, and there has to be relatable. I kind of may have had the ideas, like the seeds for it, but the actual writing of that first book took me a lot longer than I think I anticipated. Loved every minute of it. Don't get me wrong, but it's been quite a journey, and to start, you know, finding people who relate to it, who can understand it, who actually like are fans of my book. I got a phone call from a friend the other day saying, I just saw one of your shirts walking through the city. And I went, that's crazy. Like, who's wearing my shirts? Like somewhere in Portland, one of the backers for issue 2 got a bunch of stickers that I sent them. And they showed me a photo of them slapping it onto like a street sign. And I went, that's in Portland. That logo that I designed years ago is now on a street sign in Portland. There's been a couple of those moments, and they're just, you know, it's like the kind of little mini trophies that you can collect and little stories that you get to tell and kind of make it feel like a pat on the back or it's worthwhile. And they're amazing, those little things.
Awesome, awesome. Yeah, It's kind of interesting to like look back at, you know, the first things you've made and all that. And I think you could probably be one of the few people who can look back at the first book you made and it be something that's already resonating with people and, you know, having a reach, you know, having a, you know, people wear the shirts and slap the stickers everywhere and, yeah, and have that kind of response to it. And it deservedly so, I say. And as you know, I'm kind of doing a thing right now where I'm looking back at my first graphic novel and trying to look at it with as fresh eyes as possible and kind of see where I went wrong with things, where I went right with things, you know, and kind of understand my mindset behind it. It's, you know, that first book you make, that feeling has been in my mind lately. Mm. So, you know, hearing that this was the first series you did, like that was sparking all kinds of things in my brain. Like it's such a rad feeling to hold the book in your hands and you're like, holy shit, this looks like a real comic.
That was one of those moments where the book comes out of the box, you know, after it's just been printed, and you go, whoa, it's all of a sudden a thing. You know, you get to look at the pages, get to flick through it. Somebody asked me the other day, what was the first thing you did? And I'm gonna guess that you did the same thing. When you buy an album, what's the first thing you do?
You smell it.
You smell it. I don't know why I smelled it straight away. No, I smelled it before I read it.
Well, I smelled mine because I'm like, does this smell like a comic book shop? And it kind of did, you know. Yeah, and I'm like, all right, you know. And it's just that tactile feeling and just that, you know, the thing you spend decades, you know, at some point, like reading these things and just having these things be these pinnacles of your, you know, media consumption of things.
Yeah. And your childhood, like, and you're growing with them. And there's a lot of things going on there.
And you're like, wait, I just contributed to this. I just became a part of this as opposed to being the enjoyer. I am now part of the creation of this. And
yeah,
man, that's a...
It is a strange feeling.
It's such a crazy feeling, but it's a high you keep chasing.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I have to agree with that 100%.
Well, that leads me to the last question I have for you, and that is, you know, Maurice and the Metal, it's not done yet, but do you have plans for, like, the next thing after? Is that stuff that's, like, kind of bubbling in your head, or are you just 100% laser-focused on Maurice?
I'm, is there a middle ground between laser-focused and just, you know, firing a machine gun up in the air?
That's probably where most of us sit, actually, but yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm laser focused on Maurice at the moment, but then other ideas kind of creep up behind me and I go, I'll get to you. Just give me some space. And, some one shot comics because I feel like I've learned so much making comics. I think I could do a one shot really quickly. Mm-hmm. And I just want to collaborate more. Cause I've worked in such, industries where it is just me cover to cover on a magazine when I'm designing them. And with a comic, it's almost like a band. You have to collaborate. There's very few people who write and illustrate their own comics, and do it just as well. Like, you can find a writer who's stronger at writing and, you know, their illustrations not as strong. But it's just the collaboration of it. I've never had that, you know, that ability to work on a project quite like this as a duo, or I'd be happy to collaborate with more than two. There's ideas brewing. There's always ideas brewing. But yeah, I'm laser focused on Maurice, and then have to push away the other ideas or just jot them down so I'll come back to them. But at the moment, I'm looking at like 9 to 10 issues on Maurice. So it's going to keep on going. The metal's going to get bigger and heavier.
Well, yeah, that was gonna be my follow up. Like, is Maurice, you know, 4 or 5 issues, or you're talking about 9, 10? So
yeah,
so, well, awesome.
When you were writing your books, Don, did you find that you went in with the ideas and an idea of what the script was going to look like, and then as you were writing it, ideas just kept on popping up, and you go, well, I have to put that in now.
Well, I didn't write so much for my first graphic novel. I wasn't so much the writer as just, you know, the artist coming in afterwards and kind of suggesting my own ideas and things like that.
Yeah.
And really kind of, and I had a great collaboration with the writer, John Dudley, on that. And he, it was much, very much a back and forth situation. Mm-hmm. And I have written my own stuff since then. And it's been a big learning curve for me in terms of not so much like, oh man, is this a good story? What is this? It's just like, how do I get this story down? Like, do I write a script first? Do I do layouts first? Like, since I'm so used to thinking visually, where's the way to go? And each thing I've written has been written differently. You know, there's been ones where I've done like a full on script. There's ones where I was kind of just like doing, like, I had a general idea written down and I just drew the pages and I just went from there. And then there's other ones where I kind of laid out the pages and scripted some, layout pages, scripted some, and kind of like, you know, went back and forth that way. And I don't know which way was the best way yet.
All right. So which one do you feel like you struggle with more, the visual side or the written?
I think just sitting down and typing words is what.
Yeah, right.
It doesn't feel natural to me, but I also know that's the fastest way I'm going to get my ideas down.
Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. So it's kind of like getting a shorthand with myself at the very least with like, okay, what's the important things I need to write down here so I can have this here. And then when I go to start thinking about it visually or doing it visually, or if it's something I've already thought of visually, and I need to like describe it with words. Like, how can I do that without, you know, compromising what was already in my brain? So I sympathize with writers when you sit down and it's the blank page and the cursor's blinking and you're like, I had all this a minute ago.
Yeah.
Where did it go?
That story of Dave Gibbons and Alan Moore. That first panel on Watchmen was like a page long, and Dave Gibbons just picked out 4 words and went with that.
Yeah.
I mean, I want to hear more about your the contrast you have as far as being a writer and the illustrator goes, because that's just a world I'm not familiar with. You know, I think when somebody gets into comics, even as a reader, and you want to see how it's made, you want to be able to get in contact with the creator and just to ask how that goes.
Yeah.
Just to see how it gets made.
Yeah. Well, mainly for me right now, the past 2 years, I've been doing a lot of short stories with other writers and kind of just working off their scripts. And since they're like 6, 7, 8 pages, there's not a lot from me in terms of like, you know what, we should change this. Or can we do this? Can we do this differently? And I had just wrapped up a project to where I had like zero artistic input on in terms of like my ideas were a non-starter. I'm not trying to say this negatively because I was coming in at the end and I was doing some finishes over layouts and stuff like that. And the writer has had a very distinct idea of what they wanted visually. And that's not exactly what I was thinking I was getting into. So it was a bit of a learning curve there, but now I'm working on a project, you know, that I'm not the writer on, but I'm definitely heavily involved in the story. I'm definitely, and I kind of like that more than just writing by myself and then drawing by myself.
Yeah. I mean,
I like having that back and forth.
Yeah, absolutely. If you're a professional, you know what's going to work and what's not. And you should have a voice, I think, with any creative project.
Yeah.
It's not like you're a session player, you know, coming into play one riff and then leaving. You're contributing to art, you know, you're contributing to the story. I think there's an interesting take. Whenever I try and get some feedback on my books, I don't go to metalheads. I don't go to comic book fans. I mean, I do, but it's not the only person. I'm more interested in somebody who isn't familiar with metal, who isn't familiar with comics. And you go, what do you think? Like, just give me some feedback, because a comic book fan will be able to tear it apart visually and the written. The metalhead's going to tear it apart and saying, oh, you know, you could have had better choices here as far as metal songs or
how dare you say Planet Caravan's not metal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely. I mean, I love the fact that you just brought that up, and no one else has brought that up, because you just assume, like, I just assumed every metalhead knows the song Planet Caravan. But to say that would give Maurice the power, that was a back and forth in my head for a while. But it's such a collaborative medium to actually work on as far as the creatives go. So, I'm interested in finding out more about your books, Don.
Well, I'll happily...
Especially the difference.
Yeah. Well, I'll happily send... I'm actually working on some videos technically for my Patreon, but I'm going to be offering up my book, my first graphic novel, up for free. People can download it. I'll make sure I can send you a copy to that link when I do it. And because I'm going to kind of go over the pages and do all that, but just to get people to read it and check it out and kind of like come along with me, because, this is stuff I did between 2014 and 2018. And it's basically how I learned to make a comic book.
Kind of like the DVD extras then.
Yeah, exactly. So I thought it would be kind of fun as I've kind of, you know, become more mature with what I'm doing in terms of and more confident. Let's look back to where I knew jack shit. And where did I learn? Yeah. Where did I learn the things I learned? And where did where I should have known better? And how long did it take me in the process to actually, you know, get it through my head on some of these things? So,
all right. Well, I have to get onto that as well. That sounds amazing. Great idea too, especially looking at a page and how you do it differently now.
Yeah. It's definitely one of those things where it's like I kind of looked at some of it. I'm like, well, some of the stuff, like storytelling wise, I'm like, no, I did a good job here. And then there's other things where it's like, oh my god, look at that face I drew. Oh, good lord. Like, there's a lot of that.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So it's like, for me, I think it's going to be less, here's how I would have done it differently, as opposed to like, here's how I could have just made my life a lot easier and did this better, you know?
Yeah.
But who knows?
That
who
sounds
knows?
Great. Great idea.
But yeah, I'm looking forward to doing that and all that. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun. And I'll be sure to constantly mention it on these social medias. So I'm sure you'll come across it
I'll
if I forget to tag you in it. But yeah. Awesome.
That's cool. It's great to see how your books get made as well.
Yeah, it's we're all process junkies. You know, we all want to know. You know, I can watch. It's one of those things where even if it's like a thing I'm not really a fan of, like if it's a band I'm not like a super big fan of, but they have like tons of behind the scenes videos of them recording their album, I want to see this. I want to see how it goes. You know, if it's maybe not the best book I've ever read, but someone's sharing their process and how they got things together, let's see it. Like it's always cool to see how we all come to similar conclusions differently.
I mean, I think as a reader, you look at a book and go, I want to know more about the what, you know, the what the book's about. But then when you start looking into the comic book creator community, you go, I want to see how it's made.
Yeah.
And even beyond that, I want to see why it was made. Why did the writer, you know, take this turn? Why is this creative project even a thing? You know, why? I think it's a great question to ask.
Yeah.
You only get to ask, you know, once you meet a community like this. And the comic community is just insanely rich and deep and connected and really supportive. Like, I think on Kickstarter, you get more comic creators backing projects than actual comic readers.
That's kind of the running joke with especially independent comics, is there's money in independent comics. It just goes from person to person to person. just shift it all around. That's
shift
all.
It. I'll give you $4. You give me $4. Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, it's a good way to do things. I find when I'm on Kickstarter with my own campaign, I'm getting money coming in one way, but because I'm on Kickstarter so often during the campaign, I'm spending money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a project a day I'm backing, really. And you have to go, whoa, what am I doing? I'm kind of just breaking even now. I'm not going to have any money to actually print my book. But, you know, it feels like you're that supportive of the comic book community, and there's so many great books on there at the moment.
The level of competency in making comics is so high right now that it's just incredibly difficult to just find not find something. Like, you have to actively be avoiding things just to not go and back things and do all that. And especially these days, because, you know, for me, it's like if you have a digital tier on something, that's my end for you. That's like, okay, cool.
Absolutely.
You
know,
and for me, I'm like, I'm making this as easy as possible for you. We give you money. You just got to send me a link to a PDF, man. You don't have to pack anything. You have to do anything. Here's some money. Give me that link. We're all good to go.
We're done.
Yeah.
And that feedback can come instantly as well. My book takes 12 minutes to read. Within a half an hour, we can have a conversation about it. You know what I mean? And, you know, back in the day, like that would have been weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's crazy. I have that same relationship with Nicola, where he'll send me a new page sketch. I'll send it back to him, and we're like done back and forth for one page in 5 minutes. You know, it's a great. I should be doing books a lot faster.
Well, the important thing is you get them done. And
that's right.
As someone who has been glacially slow himself, done is always better than slow, and fast. Done is always better than fast and abandoned because you get burnt out.
Yeah, absolutely.
So
Because
I've done both.
I don't want to rush this, actually.
Yeah.
This is not fast food I'm making. This is a 3-course meal or a 9-course meal.
Get to savor it. Get to savor it. You know,
absolutely.
It's all about finding. You mentioned like a 3-month turnaround for an issue. That's something that you could possibly do, and that seems perfect to me. 3 months?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because, you know, I've had projects where, like the one I just finished, like, and I'm not trying to trash the project I was working on. It's just the nature of my involvement was more, I was being art directed as opposed to just being the artist and then being a collaborative partner in it. And that's just not necessarily what I expected to have happen.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, that dragged on. It was supposed to be like a 6-week gig, and it dragged on for like 4 months.
Yeah, right.
And it went on just too long, where it's just like, I just need to be done. Like, you know, and it's not that I'm not, you know, in the end proud of the work I did or phoned it in at any point. It's just like, I need next. you know?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah, a friend of mine runs a music school, and he manages a couple of bands as well, and he manages this guy who's a songwriter, and just he likes the tour, sure, but he just wants to write songs. So he wrote an album, recorded it, and then in the lead-up, the promo, it was like months between when it was recorded and when it was released, and they did a live mm-hmm. show, and he showed the manager the set list, and he goes, none of your new songs are on here. And he said, yeah, I'm tired of them. I've written new songs. And that process I have to kind of relate to now, because I'm doing the promo for issue 3 and all I'm thinking about is issue 4
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and issue 5. So it kind of feels like while I'm promoing issue 3, I'm more focused on issue 4, and then I want to be focused on issue 5. It's a great process because you're like always thinking of it. But then to have to slow down to do a Kickstarter campaign when I just want to get good going on to the next thing. Yeah, I completely understand that, Don. That's a great point.
Yeah, it's all about finding that balance for yourself. And then there's, you know, the full-on full-timers making comics where, you know, they have such incredibly crazy deadlines that, you know, they basically work themselves to the bone, have to crash for a few days, and then it's right back to it. And
yeah,
it, as much as I love the medium, that is like the one of the worst things about it. And, you know, I'm thankful that, you know, I don't need to make all my money off of comics, you know?
Yeah.
But I also have the ability to make comics. So I get to be in a rarefied era of like, well, I can work at my own pace for the most part and not.
Especially if you're writing a story as well.
Yeah, exactly. So I get to control a lot of it, even though I still manage to burn myself out.
Yeah.
You know, being, you know, getting roughly 4 hours of sleep a day, it's not great.
No, it's not, no, I can imagine.
It's not the best thing. It's not the best thing in the world for a human.
No, but how long until you say you burnt out, and then how long until you come back to it?
Well, actually, I was burnt out at the beginning of this month. I was crispy. I was toasted. I was just done. Yep. And then I'd finished I finished that project, and I took Memorial Day weekend here in the States, mm-hmm. was the end of the month. And I kind of took a few days, you know, slept in a few days.
Yeah.
Well, sleeping in as much as a parent can, not waking up at 5 is what I should say. And, and then, you know, spent a few extra nights instead of like staying up late working. I just, you know, watched some shows with my wife and, you know, hung out and did that. And that's a good recharge. And then I kind of worked on a pinup, and I got to work. I usually work digitally, but I did this one traditionally. Mm-hmm. So I got to, you know, work with some ink and all that, and just kind of like, you know, recharge my batteries that way. And, you know, play my guitars a bit, and that always helps. So it usually takes me like depending on how much actual free time I get to do stuff, if I'm burnt out, it usually takes me at least 2 to 3 days to kind of get back to normal. And then
then the need to get back into it?
Because then, you know, it's back to this other project I'm working on that I'm really excited about that I put on hold to work on a different project because, you know, the nature of the project, I was also helping somebody out, and I thought I could, it would be a small speed bump in what I was doing. Mm.
Yeah.
But so now I'm back into a project I love with people, you know, I love working with, and super, you know, and I'm getting stuff, you know, I'm getting that kind of cycle of, I'm presenting my stuff, and I'm getting stuff back, and we're feeding each other. We're giving each other that energy as opposed to being dictated to, and then I do it.
Yeah.
And then it needs to be changed because it's not exact, and so on and so forth. And it, So that I think that plays a big part too. And how long can you go before being burnt out is when you feel creatively fulfilled on something.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. That, so that can go a long way. It's actually keeping you going.
That can go a long way, I think.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Pushing you to keep moving, keep doing things. Because even with, you know, making music or doing the podcast and all that, the podcast is technically my hobby, and it's something I try to maintain to do to keep something separate from you know, having to sit down and draw and all that, and actually speak to people. and not get so lost in my own BS minutia of things. So
yeah, absolutely.
It's important to have those things too, because
yeah, absolutely.
Something I'm sure this quote's been around for a long time, but one of the things from, may he rest in peace, Wayne Static X once said in an interview was, you know, he loved making music, and then once music became his job, he had to find another hobby. So yeah, right. I think that's an important thing for people to realize, that even if you have like a full-time job and then you're trying to make it in comics, comics ain't your hobby anymore. You got to find something else to kind of separate yourself and do that. And I think there's a lot of people who are, a lot of younger generation people are, get that. Like, you can't be burnt out. You have to do the self-care thing, and you have to do that. And it's incredibly important, because, you know, this isn't, you know, this isn't the economy, the world our parents or their parents had, you know.
No, not even that. The same mentality towards having a job and keeping it.
Yeah, like, exactly.
I might get burnt out on the workload that I've decided to take on with the comic book and a full-time job and being a parent myself. But then after I've had a job for a year, I go, oh, I'm starting to get cold feet on this one. Like, I just want to move on to something else, something new. And the second that somebody comes to me with a business idea, I'm like, yes, let's do it. It doesn't really, I haven't done any research into the field, and I don't even know if it's a good idea, but I just want to create something from the ground up. So I can understand how you burn yourself out, but some of it is so self-inflicted that you really got no one else to blame. Hey,
no, 90% of my burnout is self-inflicted. You know, I've said it before on the show, and I'll keep saying it again. You know, my wife once told me I'm not happy unless I'm unhappy with how much I have to do. And it's true. It is true. It's how I'm wired. I'm just trying to figure out, where's the balance of that? Where is the balance where I feel like I've got a ton of stuff going on and I'm making progress on all of it, but I'm also not killing myself.
So, yeah, absolutely.
So
I don't know if we do it any other way, because I'm the same, Don.
Yeah, we're all, you know, I think throw a rock in the comics industry and it's us. You know, we're drawn to this like flame, like a moth to the flame, with just, we got to do everything.
I think I had so many stale years as a teenager, like just sat still sleeping until 11 o'clock, not doing anything. And now I'm 42 and I just can't slow down.
100%.
I can't keep my hands still anymore.
Yeah.
I just fidget.
I'm approaching 40 in a couple months. And I just think back to my 20s where I, especially my early 20s, because I wasn't drawing at that time. I was just kind of floating about. And I'm just like, man, what did I do with all my time? Like, and now it's like, you know, I look forward to, you know, the random half hour I can get.
Yeah, I think you appreciate that more. Like, how many hours did I put into Smash Brothers on Nintendo when I should have been doing something more productive? But, you know, that's what learning's all about.
Yeah, exactly. That's the lesson of maturity, I guess.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, I don't think I've lived a life enough to actually make a comic book then, so I'm glad I did it now when I've got a story to tell. Mm-hmm. But yeah, no, I completely agree. It's nice to know that you're not alone, especially as a creative. It's great to understand that you do have that point and how to avoid getting to it, or maybe even just getting to it and then knowing that you need to take a break.
Exactly. Yeah. That's the incredible
thing. I'm glad you've got your podcast as the as the passion.
Well, you know, and of course, in natural fashion, like during the summer months, I'm like, well, I'm going to, instead of biweekly, I'm going to go weekly. And that's just going to add all kinds of stuff to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, like I said, I'm not happy unless, so.
Yeah. You'll never stop doing it. You'll never stop doing.
Yeah. I can't stop doing. What that thing is that I'm doing, it changes.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. But there'll be things I'm doing.
Next week, you'll be making honey in your backyard with bees and the year out, like. Yeah, it just keeps on going.
Exactly, Awesome. Well, Aaron, it's been an absolute blast chatting with you. I can't wait till we do it again. So when issue 4 is ready, we'll have to have you come right back on. We'll continue this conversation. I look forward to reading Maurice in the Middle issue 3. Seeing where the story goes, what comes after that with you, and all that. It's been a blast chatting with you.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Don.
Now is the time. Let people know where they can find you. I'll make sure there's links to everything in the show notes, including the Kickstarter, which, judging on when this is going to drop, will either be in its last day or two or couple days. I'm gonna see how fast I can turn this around.
Yeah, cool. There's 5 days on there at the moment, but if anybody Googles Maurice and the Metal, it's sure to come up. It's a pretty specific title. Mm-hmm. But yeah, check it out. There's a website. It's on Comixology as well. But yeah, currently on Kickstarter. If you help me make the metal, that'd be amazing.
Awesome. Aaron, once again, thank you so much.
Thank you
for listening to the Comics Coffee Metal Podcast. Please be sure to return next week with my guest, the editor of, pretty much everything you love, Heather Antos. See you then. Yes, I'm fully aware I said this last week. Please forgive me. I made a scheduling mistake. Her episode will be more than worth the wait, though.